Paul says, with the veil off, we are bold to say, Jesus Christ is my certainty. He is the rock on whom I stand. And there is no other name in heaven or on earth by which I may be saved.
You'll want to be sure to catch the rest of Pastor Terry's message in just a moment, but first we want to say thanks for tuning in to the Indian Run Christian Church podcast with Pastor and author Terry Bailey. This podcast can be found on iTunes by searching for Terry Bailey Ministries in the iTunes store, where you can also subscribe to the podcast and get the weekly message sent automatically to you by clicking the subscribe button. Right now, let's get back to Pastor Terry as he preaches this week's insightful message.
How many of you know somebody who, as the saying goes, just glows? You know, this person is always bright-eyed. This person is always smiling. This person is always confident, always optimistic, always satisfied, always happy. You know such a person? You don't? I see some nodding. A few of you nodded. Those who nodded, let me just ask you, wouldn't you just like to slap them once in a while? I mean, a better plan might be try to find out what they've got that we don't, so that we might also be happy, positive, and optimistic. Set that back for just a moment. I'll ask you a question. How many of you perused your copy of the Code of Hammurabi this week? How many of you can spell Hammurabi? How many of you have any idea what the Code of Hammurabi is? Anybody out there? Yeah, well, Tom does. He was in the 8 o'clock service, which you probably knew before that. It is historically a big deal. It was kind of the Magna Carta of the ancient Mesopotamian realm. Hammurabi was a king, and about 1,754 years before Christ, he took a largish stone column called a stele, and he carved on it 282 rules. A lot of the rules had to do with contracts and what rights were going to be stipulated in contracts for this and that. Some of it had to do with wages and what was a fair wage and how what would be cheating people in wage-earning situations. Some of the 282 rules dealt with family relationships, paternity, divorce, spousal abuse. Some of them regulated the conduct of judges. And there were very strict penalties should a judge be found to change his mind for a bribe or anything like that stipulated in the rules. Several of the rules dealt with civic punishments. The most famous of the 282 rules is rule number 196, which agrees in part with some of the gist of the Old Covenant. It says, an eye for an eye, and a tooth for a tooth. To whatever extent I maliciously damage you, or even accidentally damage you, Hammurabi insisted, the scales must be balanced by my being equally damaged. If I break your arm, my arm must be broken. If I maliciously cost you $100, I must surrender $100. It's a harsh code. But understand, it was actually putting merciful caps on retribution, because the old system was, if I poked out your eye and you cut off my head, we'd just call it even. And there was no rule to say that you exacted more vengeance than you were due. It capped punishment at an equivalent level. An eye for an eye, and a tooth for a tooth. In the annals of history, it is considered an extremely important document, the Code of Hammurabi. A giant step forward for civilization. So why is it that you have never heard of it? I will tell you why. Because a little less than 200 years after Hammurabi carved the 282 rules on that stone column, another moral code came into the world, also carved on stone. Tablets. And you will know this one. It begins with, "Thou shalt have no other gods before me." And it ends with, "You will not waste your time and energy lusting after the things that your neighbor has." And you know the points in between those parentheses. And this new moral, legal code so outshone the Code of Hammurabi, so outperformed the Code of Hammurabi, was so much more glorious than the Code of Hammurabi, became a standard not just for a little section of the Middle East where it arose, but basically the foundation of everything that can now be called Western civilization. All this time later, we remember it, though it eclipsed and made us forget previous attempts at moral codes, so that even though we're having some arguments about it, you will still find this code, the Law of Moses, enshrined in the halls of Congress and the Supreme Court of the United States of America. You will also see it here on the front walls of the church. There was glory in the law, Paul says in this passage that Bill read for us, glory such as the world had not seen prior to that time. We all understand the predicament of men like Abraham in those days before the law came about, how Abraham was asked by God to leave that comfortable place where he was safe and part of the established power structure and to go out into a bigger world where he was, in earthly terms, a poodle among the pit bulls. And if a bigger, more powerful man wanted to take his wife away, well, it could be done. And there was no recognized law to protect a man like Abraham. He was protected only because God watched over him and had his back. But there was no law for such. We like the law better. The covenant God handed down from his hand to the hand of Moses on Mount Sinai changed the world. And there was glory in it. And there was glory for Moses in being the man who carried it down from the mountain. We remember his name all these years later when you never think of the name of Hammurabi. And this was his big moment, Moses, bearing the law from God. But for all its glory, that covenant, Paul says, was still a ministry of condemnation and of death. At the end of the day, the law only condemns you for not rising to the standard. At best, it can constrain the behavior of people who don't really want to keep it, but can be made to pay some attention to it. A ministry of condemnation and a ministry of death, because for all its greater glory than previous legal codes, the law given to Moses can only bless us for the few years of our lives here, and then its influence ends when we die. A ministry of condemnation and of death. The new covenant in Jesus Christ eclipses the law of Moses to an even greater degree than the law of Moses eclipsed previous legal codes. The new covenant, yes, it does bless us through the years of our lives here, but it is a permanent covenant with blessings that extend into eternity. The law could constrain the behavior of the unwilling, but the new covenant changes the heart until no such constraint is needed. If there was glory in the old covenant under Moses, how much greater glory, Paul asks, in the new covenant under Jesus Christ? There is barely a comparison to be made. And then Paul says this curious thing. He says, when Moses came down from the mountain to deliver the law to the people, his face was aglow. Everyone could see it because he had been in close contact with God. The distance from God, the separation from God that is our lot as sinners, had been interrupted for Moses, and on the mountaintop he was near for those few hours. His God. And when he came down, the glow of that nearness remained on his face, and it says that he had to put on a veil to cover his face for the sake of the people, because they could not be comfortable with the glow that came from Moses' even just temporary nearness to God. They feared that glow. Well, of course they did. Their unchanged hearts, long separated from God's presence by their sin, those unchanged hearts still feared God. Their undealt with failures still cause them to shy away from the perfection that is God. So cover up that face, Moses. Cover it up until the glow goes away. Until you become like one of us ordinary people again, until the effects of your momentary nearness to God has worn off, and then you can take off the veil, and we'll all be good with you again. There are two things here, and one I will just mention in passing, because it would be a sermon all unto itself if I tried to deal with it. Paul says that for those people of the old covenant who do not accept Jesus Christ, the veil remains in place because they cannot rightly read the old covenant. They don't see Christ in it. They don't read the 31st chapter of the book of Jeremiah the way that you and I do. They don't read the 53rd chapter of the book of Isaiah the way that you and I do. They don't read the 11th chapter of the book of Zechariah the way that you and I do. They don't see Christ in the story of Abraham being called upon to sacrifice Isaac and the lamb being provided at the last moment to take his place. They don't understand, as you and I do, what it means that the seed of the woman would stomp the head of the serpent. They don't see these things. The veil remains for them until they have accepted Jesus Christ. And then the veil is torn away. And the real import of the old covenant is revealed. That it always promised the coming of Jesus Christ and the new covenant of grace. Now, there is the one thing, and that's all I will say about it, though I could say much more. But there's another thing, too. Not only is the old covenant unveiled, it says that we who are in Jesus Christ rip the veil from our own faces and contemplate God unveiled. In the new covenant, Jesus Christ erases our failures with his blood. And he changes our hearts and gives us a new, clean conscience, so that those things which had so effectively separated us from God previously are ripped away, and now through Jesus Christ, into whose image we are being changed by the ministry of the Holy Spirit, in him we may now approach God more nearly and more all the time directly. And it should show. We should be the people who glow with a hitherto unknown expression of our nearness to God. And now I want to ask you a question. It's a serious question. Why are we so often so anxious to put the veil back on? Why do we do it? Are we like Moses? We do it for the sake of the people. They will be so uncomfortable with our Christ-like glow that we cover it up. Is there a half a step from there to we are just uncomfortable not fitting in this world, and so we don't want to be too very Christ-like? Are we hedging our bets, holding on to the things of this world for as long as we can, and hoping to be carried into the image of Jesus Christ only at the very end? I don't know the answers to the questions for everybody, but for some reason, we are afraid to be identified as the changed people who live in this world but are not of this world, who have become, as we become more like Him, aliens, pilgrims, strangers, sojourners, passing through a foreign territory on our way to that place from which the glow emanates. But if we put the veil back on, let me tell you what will not happen. Maybe we will still be saved. I am not the judge, and I don't get to say whether we fit in with the world until the last minute and then we exit it in some new way, and maybe we will still be saved, maybe. But I tell you what will not happen. We will not bring with us the people that we could have. The people who would have seen the glow of Jesus Christ in us and who would have wanted such a thing for themselves. The people who would have seen that we are happy and content and positive and knowing where we are going and say, how can I get a little bit of that when we put the veil on? Or worse yet, when we wait until the glow of Christ has faded from us so that we can take it off and fit in. This is what is lost. People should see your confidence. And when they ask you where your confidence comes from, you should be able to put a name to it. Jesus Christ is the source of my confidence. People should see your happiness. And when they want to know where your happiness comes from, you should be able to put the same name to it. Jesus Christ is the reason for my happiness. People should see your certainties. And when they ask you about them, you should be able to put a name to it. Paul says, with the veil off, we are bold to say, Jesus Christ is my certainty. He is the rock on whom I stand. And there is no other name in heaven or on earth by which I may be saved. Or you could put the veil on. Just fit in better. And go on your way. And be satisfied with that. But we are intended to glow. We are intended to be a light in a world of darkness. And I say to you, take that veil off! I realize this is an ironic thing to say to a room full of people with masks covering half their faces. And it's just the timing. Just the timing. But how many of you are looking forward to getting rid of these masks? All right. You may have to wait a while, but you don't have to wait to remove the veil of this world and its influence from your face and let Jesus Christ shine through right now. You don't have to wait to do that. You should not wait to do that. The world is waiting for you to do that so that they can see a better way. And some of them may want to slap you. And that's okay. But some of them will want what they see that you have. And you can put a name to it. It is Jesus Christ.
We want to take a moment to thank all of you, our faithful listeners, for setting aside time each week for the Indian Run Christian Church podcast. You can find out more about the church by visiting our website at www.christforeastcanton.com. That's www.christforeastcanton.com. On behalf of Pastor Terry and all the folks at Indian Run Christian Church, I pray God's blessing on you and your family.